Thank you, Miriam, and good morning, good afternoon, everyone. It's an honor to be here and share the findings of this case study. During my presentation, I'm going to give you an overview of the formaldehyde exposure in an anatomy lab. I'm going to explain what methods were used to analyze the exposure, workers' exposure. And I'm going to talk about the concentration, formaldehyde concentrations detected in the lab and what was done in order to control the hazards and create a win-win approach. I don't have any relationships to disclose. So this is to start with an overview. This is an anatomy lab in a community college in Southern California that provides educational programs to students in the health field. The faculty utilizes animal specimens and human cadavers to teach students anatomy. The faculty staff and students are exposed to formaldehyde from the specimens and from the human cadavers that are embalmed with this preservative fluid. So the occupational safety and health concern in this case have several players. The three players are the employer, who oversees the functioning of the college and also has the last decision when controls must be, when hazards must be addressed. The faculty and staff, who are the those exposed with the job hazards, and the EHS office that serves as a bridge between the employer and the faculty and staff, as well as make sure that the health and safety programs are in compliance. So the concern was brought up by a new technician who was exposed to the formaldehyde when he was handling the animal specimens before the classes. He was experiencing eye and respiratory irritation. The approach was to conduct a hazard evaluation and control to determine what concentrations of formaldehyde were found in the lab. And the EHS office proposed to have a third party conducting the assessment and control of this exposure. And that's where the industrial hygienist came into the story. This is to give you a visual overview of the lab. The top left picture it has the layout of the laboratory. It has six tables. Five tables have on display the animal specimens and some organs. And the last table on the back has the human cadaver. The cats and the human cadavers are embalmed with formaldehyde, and before the exam and during and after the each class, they soak these specimens to help them be moisturized, since it's a one day long during exams, and they have four classes, one after the other, and each class has lasts 2 hours. On the top right, there is a workstation, and we had some area samples collected at different working stations as well as at the perimeter inside the lab. The laboratory didn't have downdraft tables, and it had general ventilation. And during the monitoring or during the classes, the door remained closed. So next I'm going to explain the methods that we utilize to quantify the formaldehyde concentrations in the lab. We had an initial evaluation, an initial industrial hygiene evaluation, and two follow-up surveys when recommendations were implemented. We decided to collect personal and area air sample air monitoring. On the picture we have one of the students during the practical, and they were handling the animal specimens, like unwrapping the specimen when they were answering their exam. For the personal air monitoring, we did active sampling, and the instructors, four instructors, because there were four classes, were monitored. as well as the technician who raised the issue, and we chose two students per laboratory in order to know what their exposures were. For area air sampling, we also collected samples at the different working areas as well as the perimeter inside the lab, and we used a direct instrument to have instantaneous readings. The samples represented the task exposure, 2 hours, because that was the duration of each lab, and short-term and ceiling exposures. The ceiling exposures were compared to the ceiling limit published by the American Conference of Governmental Industrial Hygienists. And this level is not enforced by Cal OSHA or Federal OSHA. It's a recommended guideline. So here are the levels, the limits that we took into consideration when we obtained the results from the lab. The Cal OSHA regulatory standards have the PEL, permissible exposure limit, of 0.75 parts per million, and the action limit is 0.5 parts per million for formaldehyde. If there are concentrations at or above the action limit, so 0.5 parts per million, it triggers some requirements from the standard, the formaldehyde standard. There is medical surveillance and more specific training on formaldehyde. The ceiling limit, as I mentioned before, is published by ACGIH. It's a recommended guideline value, and we wanted to focus our attention on that concentration. We wanted to have values below 0.3 parts per million. And the ceiling limit is any concentration during any part of a working exposure. So I'm going to explain the results. For the initial IH survey, the employees' exposures to formaldehyde, if we see the red bars represent the 2-hour monitoring for each instructor, and the green bars represent the calculated 8-hour TWA. If we compare the 8-hour TWA to the PEL or to the PEL, we see that the concentrations are below the 0.75 parts per million. If we compare the concentrations with the action limit, these concentrations in the lab would be near at or above the action limit. So it triggers some of the requirements of the standard. However, these concentrations were above, they exceeded the ceiling limit of 0.3 parts per million. So based on these results, we formulated some recommendations using the hierarchy of controls. We focus on substitution. We tell the employer you need to substitute the formaldehyde fixed specimens with formaldehyde free specimens. Also, you need to substitute the formaldehyde wetting agent with a safer one. And then you start talking about engineering controls, like downdraft tables, increased general ventilation, the requirement for training, and the last resort would be like wearing respiratory protection until the engineering controls or administrative controls are implemented. The question about downdraft tables was not at the table because they are in the process of moving to a new lab, so that in improving or installing the downdraft tables would increase the cost. And this moving to the new lab, it would be in less than a year. So the employer, the faculty, and EHS office had discussions, and they decided to substitute the wetting agent. So they switched to a formaldehyde-free wetting agent. We did a follow-up IH survey, and it helped. It was effective in reducing the exposure compared to the 8-hour action limit. The levels were really below the PEL. However, they were still above the ceiling limit. So based on these results, that's the second time, we keep insisting on on substitution of the formaldehyde fixed specimens. So this is for the employees. As I said at the beginning, we also monitor the students. The first row has the data for the initial survey, and the second one is the follow-up when they switch to a formaldehyde-free wetting agent. The numbers were low compared to the AL, but it still exceeded the ceiling limit. With the direct measurements, we focus on three different tasks. The setting up, it was when the technician, along with the instructor, were laying down the specimens and they were soaking them with the formaldehyde wetting agent. The preparing of the specimens is the instructor tagging the animals with the questions so the students can answer their exams. And viewing the specimen, this is during the exam, so the students handling the animals. The results also confirm that the concentrations were above the recommended guideline values, that is 0.3 parts per million. So based on those results for the instructor's exposure, the student's exposures, as well as the direct readings, we said you need to replace this specimen. You need to continue to provide the training. Respiratory protection, based on the result, you will need to have respiratory protection during the prep time, and medical surveillance, because the numbers were below the action limit, was not required unless the employee have signs and symptoms that might be related to their exposure to formaldehyde. So after discussions, meetings, etc., they came up with the decision that they were going to substitute the formaldehyde fixed specimens with less toxic ones, as well as they were keep using the formaldehyde-free wearing agent. The results, the red ones, are the workers, employees' exposures. The concentrations are well below the action limit, the PEL, and the ceiling. And compared to the 0.3 parts per million, they are almost 10 times less. Okay. For the students, it also had the same effective result. The concentrations were below the action limit and the ceiling limit. And the direct instruments were also below the regulatory and recommended guideline values. During this study, the challenge that we faced was from the faculty, because they had been working with this specimen for many, many years, and they didn't have complaints or symptoms. And so they put kind of resistance to work with the formaldehyde-free specimens. However, they were willing to give it a try, and the results, the monitoring results, showed them that it was effective in reducing their exposure. The other challenge was that changes didn't happen overnight. It was almost a year between, it took us a year from the time that we get the baseline concentrations to the time that they accepted the changes and the exposure was reduced. And since I mentioned before, they are moving into a new building. Prevention through design was not on their radar. So people who fully understand the implications of working with this type of specimens or how to handle this type of specimens were not at the table making recommendations. When the challenges are overcome, a win-win situation is possible when all parties are involved, all aspects are taken into consideration, and health and safety are seen and applied as value within an organization. Working together, the occupational safety and health professionals can help create a safety culture model in academic labs and can disseminate information about good work practices. To conclude, I would like to extend my thank you to the faculty, staff, and students at the community colleges, the EHS representative, who was the bridge among all the parties, and my HSA co-workers who were involved in this project. Thank you very much. And I think we take questions after the last presentation, or we have time for questions. Is there any questions? No? Okay. Thank you.